Since the Boko Haram insurgency started in Nigeria's northeast over a decade ago, millions of people have been displaced and killed. But many have also gone missing, often without a trace. The International Committee of the Red Cross said last year that over 24,000 people have gone missing in the country, mostly as a result of the insurgency. This is half the number of people registered as missing across Africa by the humanitarian organization. There doesn't seem to be a centralized, in-depth and accessible database that takes records of all these people, their names, their ages, their stories and how they went missing, apart from the incredible work that the ICRC is doing. But these are victims of violence too, and the manner in which they went missing is part of security trends that need attention. Even though the insurgency started in Nigeria, it has now spilled to neighboring countries such as Niger, Cameroon and Chad. Even Nigerians, while fleeing, have found themselves in some of these countries. Some Cameroonians have also found themselves in Nigeria. This means there are possible cases of missing persons amidst all this forced migration across borders. Hello, welcome to The Crisis Room, a podcast from Human Angle. I am Hawa Shafi Nuhu, standing in for my colleagues Maria Mustafa and Murtala Abdullahi. In this podcast, we look at crisis trends across the country and answer the tough questions around them. This week, I am here with my colleagues Kunle Adebajo and Isaac Oritogun, both of whom are heavily involved in our missing persons project.
Hi, Hawa. It's good to be here.
Hello, Hawa. It's good to be here. Thank you.
Thank you both so much for joining us. Kunle, you have spent this year investigating cases of missing persons in Nigeria's northeast. So far, the Human Angle dashboard has collected data about over 1,600 people who have gone missing. And so I would like to ask, how wide is this problem exactly? And how do people go missing without a trace?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the project by the International Committee of the Red Cross. And even though the statistics cover all of Nigeria, the bulk of those figures have to do with what's going on in the northeast, the Boko Haram insurgency. Another thing that the ICRC has noted is that the figure is merely the tip of the iceberg. So even though it is like the largest in Africa, it also weighs in comparison to what's the reality on the ground. And we have also discovered this because from our own independent research, we, from a period of just 3 months, which Isaac is going to expound on, across four government areas, we were able to gather data on missing persons as many as 1,600. So then you wonder if this is the case from just four local government areas, which you've not even exhausted.
Mm.
What then is the true picture? We know there are over 2 million people who have become internally displaced as a result of the crisis. We know tens of thousands of people have been detained across several years, also because of the crisis and because of the counterinsurgency efforts of the military. But within these two numbers, there are people in the grayscale where their family members are not exactly sure where they are. And there are different reasons accounting for this. But it's especially due to the nature of the displacement when people are running helter-skelter to escape into safety from the marauding Boko Haram insurgents. The lack of coordination causes them to lose contact. And before you know it, yes, several years are passing and people have not heard from their sons, their daughters, their fathers, their loved ones, etc. Sometimes it's because of the military efforts or operations where people are sometimes profiled and then detained without due process. So without them reaching out to the families to communicate to them that this is the status of your relative who is suspected of these crimes. So usually they are just detained indefinitely without trial for several years. And they are cut off from the world. So such people too, because the families do not know, they are equally registered as missing.
Wow, that's a lot to take in. I think this gives a fairly large picture of how people go missing in the country. Isaac, can you explain to us what the data collection process of these missing persons is like?
Okay, thank you, Hawa. Kunle had done a lot in talking about, you know, what really prompted us going into the project and all of that. And so earlier in the year, we knew we needed to do this, and then we randomly selected local governments in southern Borno, and then we randomly selected five, Bama, Chibok, Askira Uba, Goza, and then Dumbwa. Unfortunately, we weren't able to get data collector for Dumbwa, so we just held off on that. But the first thing we thought to do was to develop our data collection tool, which is sort of a questionnaire. And then we asked very basic questions, tried to make it very simple. And some of the questions included the name of the respondent or the person giving us the information, and then the name of the missing person, the agenda, what they do, their level of education, and who, and the relationship of these persons with the missing persons. And if eventually they've been found or they were missing within a period of time, they also get to tell us that. And then they also get to mention who they think is responsible for, you know, their relative or loved one being missing. Like only mentioned, sometimes it might just be the military. Some other times it might be the Boko Haram. And then we found a few cases of kidnapping here and there. Well, less than 10%. But yes, there were cases of kidnapping as well. And there were cases of, you know, we also had to ask them if it was forced or just willful, you know, absence or disappearance. And some said, well, yeah, they came back from captivity, but they went back. And I got that a lot from some of the ladies or women. So that was just some of the questions we asked. And then after that, we engaged these data collectors. These are persons that have worked in development space for a period of time. And then some of them, we've also had to interface with them at some point. So over a period of 1 week, they were trained to get familiar with the data collection tools. And then we also piloted the tools in Maiduguri. And after that, we commissioned them to now go to the field to collect data. So intermittently, we get to clean the data, get feedbacks from them and all of that. So that's just the process from developing the tool to training the data collectors to testing the tool and then, you know, interfacing with them during the data collection process to make sure that they are collecting the data properly. Yeah, and then, of course, debriefing them also, which we did earlier in the month.
Oh, wow. That sounds like a really rigorous process. And because we're talking about insecurity now, I'm wondering, I think that we have a data problem in the country, but would you agree that the problem is especially prominent when it comes to insecurity and the insurgency in the country?
Data collection is really funding dependent. You know, you'd agree with me that we're supposed to have done our census, for example, and, you know, it dragged naturally or normally it's supposed to be a 10-year period and, you know, it has dragged and hopefully we get to do it next year. And then you see that our census is not even funded by the Nigerian government to start with. You know, it's also partly funded by international organizations. So it's just a sad reality in Nigeria that data collection is really poor. Of course, the NBS they're doing a lot, but, you know, they can't just do as much as that. And on the aspect of the insecurity, ICRC is really doing well. You know, I was debriefing the data collectors, and then one of them mentioned that normally when they go to collect these data, they get to interface with respondents who say, oh, ICRC also had come to ask them if they had missing persons and the rest. And then interestingly, one of them also told me that, you know, there was this time he was working along in his community because they are from these communities. And then person came to him and told him that, oh, the person that they had reported with ICRC has been found, you know, and all of that. So one thing we also embedded is the fact that some of these persons, if they've been found, you let us know. I think the next phase will be to really go back to these persons and ask if they've been found. So we also have like a map to say, oh yeah, these persons have been found and the rest. But yes, on your question, I think data is an issue. It's a big issue, and also one because it's expensive, and then also because we need people who are willing to collect data or to make data influenced policies. And that's the problem. So yes.
Well, in addition to what Isaac said, I think there's a peculiar problem when it comes to conflict ridden areas also, because there is a challenge with access. So even when there's funding available, it's also difficult to get. Like you mentioned, we could not get a data collector for Damboa initially. Go on.
Yeah, in the first phase, we weren't able to get someone in Damboa. And that's because, you know, we got a lady who was willing to collect the data, but she's not, you know, she doesn't live in Damboa. She lives, I think, in Askira or so. So we, with the nature of the road and all, we just decided we couldn't engage her to collect the data. So we had to just hold off on Damboa for a while. And then, yes, we now have someone in Damboa having collected data over the past 3 months. And we intend to collect data over the next 3 months. And then we see how much. So, yes, access is an issue. Some of those places are hard to reach, like they say, and it's difficult to get people there.
Sounds like a lot. Kunle, seeing as the insurgency flings people across the country and even beyond, do you think the missing persons problem might extend well beyond the country, especially as it relates to the insurgency?
Well, certainly. There's a reason there are multinational efforts to counter the insurgency. There's a reason we have the MNJTF, and there's a reason Lake Chad countries are uniting to see what they can do in tackling the problem, because there's an international dimension to it. Some of the stories that we've covered, for example, have to do with people going missing in Cameroon as refugees. So you find that perhaps they would be arbitrarily arrested by the Cameroonian military, or perhaps when they are returning back to Nigeria, they are attacked by Boko Haram, and then in the course of that, they go missing while trying to run for their lives. So absolutely, there are also cases of Cameroonians crossing the border into Nigeria because of, you know, the internal crisis that they're experiencing over there as well. And because of the lack of documentation at the borders, the fact that the borders are porous and anybody can cross at various points, it also adds to the problem. So the authorities themselves do not keep reliable records of those who are crossing in and out of the borders. So that also compounds the issue of tracking people who have lost touch with their family members. So from my observation, some of the cases that are even easy to resolve are cases of family members flung across the borders. So the problem might be that they don't have the resources to transport themselves back to the country, or they are not certain about the status of their families, so they just remain as refugees in Cameroon. And so it just takes an organization to say, oh, do you have people that you're looking for? Do you have people you want to reunite with? And then they check the records, compare them, and see how they can intervene.
Thank you so much, Kunle and Isaac, for joining us and sharing all of this insight as regards the Missing Persons Project. It's an incredibly important work, especially with the way that we're putting faces, stories, and ages to these numbers of people who have gone missing. This is an episode of The Crisis Room by Human Angle. Thank you for listening. I am Hawa Shafi'i Nuhu. Join us in a fortnight for another episode. Members of our production team are Mutala Abdullahi and Anthony Asemota. The executive producer is Ahmad Selkida.